Today we've got lots of news. There is a piece of really spectacular news coming out of Get Out.
Get Up just sent an email to all their supporters, just about 5 to 1, yesterday, announcing that Coles is going to cease its contract with using IT platforms from Palantir, that coming from, that being from next year, and that's on the back of a very good campaign, predominantly through social media, where they drew people's attention to, I understand, the visual recognition technology. Whenever you go and buy something, you need to get a seedling at Bunnings or buy the milk at Coles. So that is an actually great
You're
thing.
In your system. They're your, you yeah. Without any permissions, we're having your face, et cetera, being collected, and, data.
Your data, and there's obvious, very obvious privacy-related issues there. It also means that if you, when you're going to Coles or Bunnings, you no longer need to wear a mask when you're scanning and getting your groceries. But that's a great, great, great story.
Yeah, that's a great win. There's a variety of other things that have been happening as well.
Did we want to speak about what's the news? I think it was Guardian report on Thursday, Macquarie University. This is just tying in the theme. If you just listen to the stick together, what's been happening at Melbourne University with the academics, and we've also covered it here. There was a report in The Guardian that Macquarie University is actually using an AI chatbot, which they refer to as a virtual peer, in two of their psychology courses to replace in-person tutorials.
Yeah, which is a really stunningly undermining of the university process and what it's supposed to be built on, which is the Socratic method.
And we were talking about this off air as well. I mean, obvious during the tutorial process, it's part of the socialization process. It obviously costs a lot of money these days. And if you're going
to interact with each other.
And instead, we're going to be interacting via a virtual chatbot.
Which is kind of interesting. I was doing the training here at 3CR as one of the trainers, and some of the young people that were in the group talked about how when they first started, they weren't sure if they were going to enjoy coming on a Saturday to do training, but then they got really excited about it and they really look forward to it because, unlike at university, you actually interacted with people. Isn't that wild?
That is wild. That's just crazy. Personal interaction. Who would have thought that's
it is the basic key for human development to interact with people.
It's the key in the discipline of teaching and learning. There is that part as a teacher or instructor. You are looking for visual cues to see if the knowledge you're trying to teach is getting there. If it's not, then you adapt your approach.
You must, inevitably, it's beginning to think, you're beginning to think that the reason for universities is really as a business model that gives out certificates, however they are gained. That is the death knell of, and of course, if you're a reader and you used to read Solzhenitsyn, that was one of the deep ploys in most of his novels, was that a whole range of people at a technical level that were responsible for incredibly important machinery, etc., were beginning to be unskilled because the certificates that they'd received were not. They'd received them in a way that was didn't prove their capabilities. I mean, I'm just jumping ahead there.
That's a very interesting point you bring up. And now we're talking about, we're drawing an analogy that universities and tertiary education is becoming like a commodity, a factory. And I read the news stat this week. I was pretty astounded. Australian education sector is the largest source of sort of exports and economic activity in Australia. It's something like $7.5 billion.
Well, it's great to see that the the workers at the campuses are fighting back and keeping us abreast of the diabolical nature of the business plans that the higher echelons, if that's the right word, you know, they do say that scum rises to the top, are manipulating our public health, our public education system for the benefit of private business. The other thing that was interesting on the radar to over the last few days was seeing Albanese and his cohort look extremely uncomfortable at the latest...
The Pacific Islands Conference in Palau?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Greenpeace Australia-Pacific reports that... branded the Albanese government's approval of BHP's gold mine extension in central Queensland as an affront to the Pacific leaders and communities grappling with climate disaster and a reckless move that undermines Australia's partnership with the Pacific as the PM meets regional leaders at the Pacific Islands Forum. And the Pacific Island leaders felt the same way. And despite the greenwashing of the ABC reports, we'd have to say that in actual fact, there is a frightening level of dissonance between the Australian government's climate change policies and the reality on the ground.
And I'm just looking very quickly at an SBS News report, which just this morning on it, and there's a very great quote from Vanuatu's climate change adaptation and energy minister, Ralph Reganvanu. Australia is a major producer of fossil fuels. We all know fossil fuels are the primary driver of the climate crisis. The very least a country like Australia could be doing is stopping future expansion, and it's not doing that. You need to stop expansion, and you need to start transitioning away. There was also in the SBS report, it refers to an advisory opinion from the International Court of Justice, which said explicitly that countries are responsible not just for their emissions at home, but also for the harm and damage that is linked with their exports of coal, oil and gas.
And speaking from Palau, Dr. Simon Bradshaw, COP31 lead at Greenpeace Australia Pacific, said it is deeply insincere for Prime Minister Albanese to meet Pacific leaders here in Palau to discuss security, the energy crisis and regional threats while his government fast-tracks the biggest security threat to the Pacific, the climate crisis. Interestingly enough, the centre stage was Australia's economic... support for what they called a big fight against drugs. Apparently, there's a huge amount of drugs out there in the Pacific, and so we need to put a lot of money into surveillance, and the surveillance is going to be aerial.
So it has nothing to do with concerns about China at all, Annie?
Oh, it's always drugs are bad. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the level of threat drugs are, but they always seem to pull that out of their bottoms.
But isn't that kind of like the wrong approach? Shouldn't it be treated as if that is a health or society issue rather than something, a law enforcement type approach?
Well, all the visuals that went with the report were all about... cargo ships and tankers, you know, the implication is that it's some sort of way through for bringing drugs across, I don't know, whatever. I mean, it's a business, man. It's a business. Don't you know? It's the greatest slush fund in the entire universe, apparently. Anyway, I mean, if you're going to run oligarchs, you've got to have a way of stashing your money in a way that nobody's got any fingerprints on. That's just basic business, man. Basic business is the attack on RAFU. We did cover it on Stick Together. RAFU, the Retail and Fast Food Workers Union, which you've got to admit is punching above its weight. And despite the Carroll government passing through the lower house reform amendment bill, Association Incorporated Reform and Bill 2026, which is supposed to be focusing on red unions. And we know that red unions are, you know, actually quite a small threat, or as Sarah Misson put it, a red herring.
I hadn't even heard of the phrase red unions before until I saw that press release.
It's a PR carry-on. You would have noticed them in Queensland, for example. Yeah. There's a union they call themselves associations usually, and they talk about things like they try to divert workers from the unions like the Australian Nurses and Midwives Federation and the Teachers Union, and they call themselves federations or associations. I mean, not that there aren't people, organisations that are clearly membership-driven organisations that are unions that work on the principle of collective bargaining, right? But these ones talk about individual bargaining platforms and talk about how they're not affiliated with any political party, that sort of stuff. Now, what they're actually usually financed by business interests, private business interests, and it's trying to divert people's attention away from using collective bargaining is a form of advancement for the union, for ordinary workers, and so the complication is that RAFU is a membership based organisation, and it came out of a direct battle against the better overall test that the SDA collaborated with Coles with. I mean, in the sense that the SDA accepted a deal which ultimately was shown to be not credible.
I read a bit. There was quite a bit of information on RAFU's website about their history, and that's how I learnt. But getting back to the better off test, I understand that was actually someone who made an independent researcher and made a submission and proved that people who worked for Coles. Mm. That they were worse off under the SDA and membership.
Exactly.
And he became one of the key people setting RAFU up.
Well, the thing about the SDA is that it's quite an old union. It's got a huge membership base because whenever people go and work in any of these organisations, part of the deal with the Coles and big supermarkets is that when the person is employed, they are immediately funneled through to the SDA as the representative union, and and that's why they've got this huge base. And often they're young and they churn through the people, right?
Right.
Now the next thing is that, and there was no alternative to this organisation. Mm-hmm. When RAFU turned up, they suddenly had to pull their socks up because it was provable that they were accepting deals that were undermining the welfare of their members.
I started to become aware of RAFU about a decade ago because they were winning all these
cases.
Class actions.
Yeah, yeah, because they're smart and they're dedicated and they care.
Yeah.
And right.
And they're recovering.
They're on the side of their workers.
They're recovering lost wages, back pay. All
the runs are on the board.
I recall there was at a McDonald's franchisee, there was an issue with sexual harassment, and the actual first time it ever happened, the young staff walked off the job. It's just extraordinary, these attacks against RAFU, which is, you know, as I understand it, real democracy because it is member-led.
Yeah. Now, the thing is that, as it's been pointed out by Sarah Misson, there's a caveat on the Fair Work Commission that the only representative, if there's an organisation that can cover you, the provision is that you can't form a registered organisation if there is already a registered organisation to which your members, in inverted commas, could more conveniently belong. Now, the SDA is a huge influence on the ACTU. It has a huge power base within the Labor Party, and it would have to be said that the new Premier, Carroll, leading into the election. I mean, they are on the verge of going into caretaker mode, and he brings this to Parliament.
Mm.
It's got to be considered a very targeted attack on RAFU for SDA.
What?
I mean, that's what it looks like. I don't know if it's true, but it appears to be so.
But I mean, it is good that a number of unions have demonstrated solidarity. And
yeah, more solidarity for RAFU than they showed for the CFMEU, I'll have to say, which is also a fighting union. And if you've got The Age this morning, you'll see that it, once again, the hero of the Liberals and the dark forces, Mackenzie, is out again as the saviour of all people, besmirching John Setko and Ralph Edwards once again. Obviously, they got up the nose of Michael Crosby, and the leak to Mackenzie and the front page of The Age is still on, all hot property. And also the other thing is that there was a headline about the police going again to one of the CFMEU ex, you know, someone who's been fired and who was already being looked into for financial malfeasance, which was a year ago. A year ago he was already, and now they've come again to his house. And as someone pointed out, he wasn't under arrest or anything. He was allowed to move around, which was different from what they did the previous week. The police, none of these organisations are covering themselves with much glory, doing the beck and call of the Labor Party in office at the moment. I mean, it seems really weird that their police should be deciding to do something about a person who they could get any time they wanted, and whose charges were a year old. I mean, what is this?